Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I'd love to chat today about, I think, one of the most interesting job functions and how it stands in today's world where the traditional divisions between, let's say, professional media and self-published media like podcasts is kind of getting very blurry. I was watching a podcast episode the other day that was very, very professionally produced. The lighting, the sound, the audio, the visuals were all absolutely top-notch, and in fact better than a lot of stuff you see make it out into broadcast TV. So the level of professionalism in media is now very, I feel like we're getting to a point, or arguably we're already there, in which a well-produced podcast is just as reputable as, you know, a significant TV show. My own experiences doing things like interviews on podcasts, radio, TV a couple of times over the years has been that the producers of these shows play a crazy, crazy role, by which I mean they're the unsung heroes, whether it's, and as you move up, the reason I mentioned the divide between national TV and podcasts is that if you're going on, let's say, national radio, and you get contacted by a producer, it's a very, you feel they have a very serious operation going on. They do, they'll interview you and you're never quite sure what they're doing. Sometimes it's to make sure you know what you're talking about, or just to get a sense for what topics you're going to discover. If you're good on radio, I guess, is probably something they're looking out for. Maybe triaging legal riskies even. But every time, I've done this a few times, and you go on the radio for a few minutes, and that interview as a producer might be 15 minutes. Now, I keep thinking, if you listen back to your and if you get on TV or radio and you listen back to your segment, and it's a 3-minute segment in a show, what I can never understand is if every single guest has to be vetted and interviewed, pre-interviewed and screened, and maybe some of them, let's say, weeded out, how on earth does the show have time to actually get on the air? Because it's an absolutely seems like a Herculean effort. And they're very impressive people. They really keep the show running. And the kind of host, the famous, you know, person at the head of the show that everyone knows, you kind of see that it's a very front and back office operation. The back office is, you know, sometimes mentioned in credits and at the end of the show, but there it's a whole team of producers, researchers that make radio and TV happen. So what I'd love to know, Herman and Corin, I often mention that I love thinking and learning about how these different job functions work because there's something instructive about them. And I think if there's something we could probably learn from busy TV producers, it's mastering the art of quick and effective communication, because they don't have time to wait around for these things. And they obviously need to be very quick and efficient at that in order to not become a major bottleneck to production. So it seems to me like one of the most challenging jobs that you can imagine. And it's blending into that traditional workflow that at the high budget end of, you know, big productions could stand up a team. It's getting blurry now where podcasts actually sometimes have producers. And the other major trend in media that I think is fair to say has been happening for a while is for front of show talent, the on-screen people, to actually do some of the producing themselves. So to be not just in front of the camera, the microphone, but also sometimes stepping into that role. So I'd love to get your thoughts, Herman and Corin, on how producers do what they do on major shows. Like if we take a show like SNL that's going out to, you know, tens of hundreds of millions of people, and they have to get it right. They have to get it. They can't take crazy defamation risks, but they also have to get the show on air by a certain time, or a talk show where there's going to be a high volume. It's relying upon guests talking to the host. Herman and Corin, how do the unsung heroes of TV, radio, and podcasts do what they do? And what can we learn about them in the process. Over to you, Herman and Korn.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn, and I'm sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. It is a beautiful day to dive into some deep media theory, is it not?
It really is. And we have a great starting point today. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note earlier this week that really got me thinking. He was watching a high production podcast recently and realized that the technical quality, the lighting, the audio, and the pacing were actually better than a lot of what you see on network television these days.
It is a fascinating observation because it points to this massive convergence we have been seeing over the last few years. The wall between what we used to call professional media and self-published media has not just been breached, it has effectively been demolished. By early 2026, the distinction between a Netflix special and a top-tier YouTube creator has blurred significantly for many viewers.
Exactly. And Daniel was specifically curious about the people who make that happen. Not the faces on the screen, but the producers. He called them the unsung heroes who manage everything from guest vetting and legal risks to those impossible production schedules. He wanted us to look at how these folks manage such high-stakes environments and what we can learn from their communication style.
I love this because producers are essentially the central nervous system of any media project. If you think about the hosts as the face and the editors as the hands, the producer is the one making sure all the signals are traveling where they need to go in real time. And here in late January of 2026, that role has become infinitely more complex than it was even 5 years ago. They are now navigating a world of hybrid remote workflows and real-time AI integration.
Right, because a producer today is not just booking a flight in a hotel for a guest. They are managing an entire ecosystem. Herman, you've been looking into the current state of media infrastructure lately. How much of this professionalization is due to the technology getting easier versus the roles themselves getting more specialized?
That is the big question, Korn. It is a bit of a paradox. On one hand, tools for high-quality production have become incredibly accessible. We have discussed this a bit in previous episodes, like back when we talked about GPU scaling. That kind of processing power allows small teams to do things that used to require a $100,000 rack of equipment. But as the technical barrier drops, the organizational barrier actually rises. When anyone can make a show that looks like it belongs on the BBC or NBC, the differentiator becomes the quality of the operation behind the scenes. It is about the discipline of the workflow.
So the producer becomes the gatekeeper of that quality. Daniel mentioned something in his prompt that struck me. He talked about being interviewed by a producer for a radio segment. He said the interview lasted 15 minutes, but the actual segment on air was only 3 minutes long. He was wondering how they had the time to do that for every single guest.
Oh, the pre-interview. That is a classic producer move, and it is a masterpiece of efficiency. Most people think a pre-interview is just a casual chat to make sure you are not a robot, but it is actually a high-level data-gathering mission. A good producer is doing three things in those 15 minutes. First, they are vetting your expertise. Can you actually back up what you say you know? Second, they are looking for the soundbite. They want to hear you explain a complex concept in 30 seconds so they can tell the host, hey, ask him about the bridge analogy, he nails that. And third, they are performing a legal and reputational triage.
That legal triage part is huge, especially now. We are seeing more and more scrutiny from regulators like the Federal Communications Commission. Regulators like the FCC continue to increase scrutiny on candidate appearances and political ad buyers. If you are a producer for a major show in 2026, you cannot just wing it. You have to be incredibly disciplined about who you put on that microphone because the liability is massive.
Absolutely. And that is where the communication mastery comes in. Think about the level of focus required. If you are producing a daily show, you might be vetting 5 or 6 people a day while simultaneously coordinating with the legal team and the technical crew. They use a very specific type of shorthand. Have you ever noticed how producers speak in the booth, Korn?
It is almost like a different language. It is incredibly direct. There is no room for fluff or ambiguity.
Exactly. It is what I like to call high bandwidth, low latency communication. In a fast-paced environment, you do not have time for a 5-minute preamble. You say, we need a 30-second bump at the top of the hour, or the guest is trailing off, move to the next segment. It sounds blunt, even rude to an outsider, but it is actually deeply respectful of everyone's time and the quality of the final product. It is about removing the friction of politeness to ensure the clarity of the instruction.
I think there is a lesson there for all of us, even if we do not work in media. Most of our professional lives are cluttered with vague emails and meetings that could have been three sentences. Producers have mastered the art of the clear brief. They tell you exactly what is needed, why it is needed, and when the deadline is. There is no guessing.
And they are managing second-order effects constantly. Let us say a guest drops out 10 minutes before a live hit. A producer does not panic. They have a backup, or they have a way to pivot the segment. That kind of resilience is built on a foundation of extreme preparation. I remember reading a paper recently about the cognitive load on media producers. They are essentially running a real-time simulation of the show in their head while the actual show is happening. They are thinking two segments ahead while listening to the current one for any potential legal landmines.
It is interesting you mention the legal landmines. With the blurring lines Daniel mentioned, we are seeing podcasters and self-publishers running into the same problems that traditional broadcasters have faced for decades. Defamation, copyright infringement, and now the whole issue of content authenticity and deepfakes. Herman, how are producers in 2026 handling the threat of synthetic media?
This is where the producer role is becoming more of a technical analyst. In recent years, tools for verifying intellectual property in media have advanced significantly. Producers are now using tools to verify the provenance of video and audio files. There is a group called the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, or C2PA, that has been developing these digital watermarks. A producer today has to be able to look at a clip and say, wait, the metadata here does not match the source, we cannot run this. It is a level of technical vetting that simply did not exist 10 years ago.
So the producer is now part journalist, part lawyer, and part cybersecurity expert. That is a heavy lift. It explains why we are seeing more shows adopt a showrunner model, which used to be exclusive to scripted television. Now, even a high-end news podcast or a technology show will have a showrunner who maintains the creative and executive vision while the line producers handle the day-to-day chaos.
And that brings us to the other trend Daniel mentioned, which is the front of show talent doing their own producing. We see this a lot in the creator economy. You have a YouTuber or a podcaster who is the face, the writer, and the producer all in one. But there is a ceiling to that, right? You can only go so far before the complexity overwhelms you. You eventually hit the wall where you are either a great host or a great producer, but you cannot be both at a world-class level simultaneously.
I think that is where the quality gap is starting to widen. You can have the best camera in the world, but if you do not have that invisible hand guiding the narrative and managing the risks, the show feels thin. It feels unpolished. I think we are reaching a point where the audience can sense when a producer is missing. They might not be able to name what is wrong, but they know the pacing is off or the questions are not quite hitting the mark.
You are so right, Korn. A good producer is like a good referee in a football match. If they are doing their job perfectly, you barely notice they are there. But if they are absent, the whole thing falls into chaos. And I think the most interesting thing we can learn from them is how they manage that chaos through structured workflows. They do not just hope things go well, they have a checklist for everything.
Let us talk about those takeaways for a minute. If I am an office worker or a project manager, how do I apply producer logic to my day-to-day?
The first thing is the pre-interview concept. Before you have a big meeting, have a 5-minute check-in with the key participants. Ask them, what is your main point? What do you need from this? That way, when the actual meeting happens, you have already cleared the brush. You are not wasting 20 people's time while one person tries to remember a statistic. It is about pre-flighting your interactions.
I love that. It is essentially pre-loading the context. And what about the communication style? How do you be direct without being a jerk?
It is all about the shared goal. In a production booth, everyone knows the goal is a perfect broadcast. If a producer says, cut that story, it is not a personal attack on the host. It is a professional judgment for the good of the show. If we can establish that kind of shared purpose in our teams, we can afford to be much more direct. We can say, this project is off track, we need to pivot, and everyone understands it is about the goal, not the ego.
That is a powerful shift. It requires a lot of trust, though. You have to trust that the producer knows what they are doing.
And that trust is earned through that meticulous preparation we talked about. A producer who knows the legal risks, knows the guest's history, and knows the technical constraints is a producer people will listen to. They are the calm in the center of the storm.
It makes me think about our own process here at My Weird Prompts. We do not have a traditional producer in a booth, but we have Daniel sending us these prompts, and we have our own research phase. Even on a smaller scale, you can see how much better the conversation is when we have done that legwork.
Absolutely. Even in a collaborative, brotherly dynamic like ours, there is a production element. We are vetting ideas, we are thinking about the flow, and we are trying to anticipate what our listeners want to hear. And speaking of listeners, we have been doing this for over 325 episodes now, and the feedback we get really helps us refine that process.
It really does. And if you are out there listening and you have been enjoying this journey with us, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people discover the show and keeps us going.
It really makes a difference. And we love hearing from you. You can always go to myweirdprompts.com and use the contact form to tell us what you think or send us your own weird prompts. Daniel is the primary source of our topics, but we are always curious about what is on your minds too.
So, looking ahead to the rest of 2026, do you think the producer role will eventually be automated? We are seeing all this AI for metadata and workflow coordination. Experts at the BBC and elsewhere have been discussing how software-based processing is becoming the norm for hybrid live production. Does the human producer survive?
I think they become more important, not less. AI is great at the grunt work. It can transcribe the audio, it can tag the footage, it can even flag potential copyright issues. But it cannot add taste. It cannot understand the nuance of a human conversation and say, wait, that was the moment, let us dig deeper there. The producer of the future is the one who uses AI to handle the logistics so they can focus entirely on the storytelling and the human connection.
That is a hopeful note to end on. The machine handles the schedule. The human handles the soul.
Exactly. It is about moving from being a manager of things to being a curator of ideas.
Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground today. We have looked at the blurring lines between professional and indie media, the secret language of the production booth, and how to apply producer logic to our own lives.
It has been a blast. I'm going to go see if Daniel has any more prompts in the queue. He has been on a roll lately.
He really has. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. You can find us on Spotify and at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We will be back next week with another deep dive into the obscure and the fascinating.
Until then, keep being curious.
Take care, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.